Hi, this is Noni DeLong with Hope Health at hopenotdope.ca, and today I'm going to talk a little bit about the importance of the gut biome, what that is and what it means or can mean for you. Some of the most exciting research in nutrition today is centered around this gut biome, and my favorite of that I've seen so far has come out of Caltech, and I will put a link in the content below to that, to some of those talks. I think they're put out through TED or TEDx. So the gut biome, if you haven't heard this term before, refers to the microbiota of the intestine, so the upper intestinal lining. And basically it refers to the bacteria that live there, and the diversity of bacteria. We know now that the bacteria in your gut, in all of our guts, in the healthy person, outnumbers our human cells exponentially, and that the type and diversity and health of bacteria in our gut really plays a determining role in the health of our minds, our moods, our impulses, our focus, our socialization, our immunity. And so this is applicable to inflammation, how we detoxify things, which genes get turned on and off in the body, so epigenetics, and how much inflammation we have in the body. So this is just incredible in terms of its impact, and we really don't understand it fully yet, but we know enough to know that it's important. And certainly research is going to be looking into which particular bacteria can be used to treat which particular disease states. But from a nutritional perspective, what we can do is we can look at research to date to determine if there are particular strains we can use for specific disease states, or whether it is more beneficial to use a broad strain probiotic to ensure that the intestinal lining has everything it needs to function optimally. Now, I'm an advocate of the latter because I don't think that we are all capable of, having readily prepared fresh, specific strain probiotics. And I'm wary of probiotics that are packaged, because it's really hard to know how alive they are. These are supposed to be living bacteria. And certain companies will do random tests on their product or encapsulate them in specific ways or refrigerate them or guarantee refrigeration from manufacture to delivery and test them randomly to determine how many living bacteria there are in that particular product. And so that will be like a guaranteed number. It will say something like 50 billion live cell, of 12 strains, bacteria guaranteed. And, the more strains, I think, for the most part, the better, unless you're dealing with a very specific issue, in which case I can counsel you. But overall, if you use a broad strain, potent probiotic, you will notice benefits within at least within a 1 month period, definitely within a 2 month period. And if you don't, it's not active. It's most certainly not active because the benefits will be that noticeable. It should improve not just your digestion, it should improve your mental clarity, your focus, your appetite, your cravings, your immunity, a lot of your health should be impacted if you have any dysfunction in any of those areas when you're supplementing adequately. And I think in my experience clinically, there's only one commercial brand that I recommend and in pill form and one in liquid form. And other than that, and I recommend those as a starter generally to start your own culture. And I teach people how to home ferment or how to make fermented foods at home, which are full of these probiotics. I caution you against using yogurt and kefir from the grocery store, unless it's a health food store and it's unpasteurized for this purpose, because pasteurization is like a process of flash heating the foods to a very high temperature to kill bacteria, to make it safer for consumption, the idea being that bacteria cause products to go bad and cause us to get sick. Faulty science, but nonetheless, our grocery habits have not caught up with, you know, and food habits have not caught up in the West with that new science that suggests that bacteria is very important and very healthy. So those aren't the best foods to get because the bacteria that do survive this flash heating will be nominal and you're just paying for expensive dead food. It's much superior to get, if you can, organic or raw, if you can get it, dairy products. I recommend if you have any inflammation in the body, especially if you have autoimmune disorders or seasonal allergies or eczema or psoriasis, switch to sheep's milk or goat's milk. And oftentimes that will help solve the problem. And if you need whey in the form of a shake, go to New Zealand whey and get fermented whey. Those should be far more easily assimilated if you're sensitive to dairy. Hi, we're back. This is Noni DeLong of Hope Health at hopenotdope.ca. This is part two of Good Bugs, talking about the gut microbiome and what that has to do with health. So we talked about it in general terms, and I'm just going to get a little more specific in this part, in this chapter. You know, I think it's really good to have an understanding of how this develops and how important it is. You know, we're, as I said, we're just starting to understand it. The science is rather new, but I'll tell you what our understanding is to date. So the idea at present, the dominating idea, is that when you are in utero, you do not have a microbiome, an intestinal microbiome. Because when we speak of microbiome, there are several. There's a microbiome on our skin. There's one inside of the vaginal canal. There's one inside of our intestinal tract. And there is also the oral microbiome in the mouth. And so when we're born vaginally, we are inoculated by the bacteria of our mothers, and we ingest some of that, and it sort of seeds itself into the newborn. And it's, you know, very obvious that this could be a huge component in why cesarean-born babies or babies born to very ill mothers struggle and have a lot of problems or can have a lot of problems with early development. We know that cesarean-born babies have higher risks associated with autism and asthma, allergies, ADHD, just to name a few. So this really helps to explain why this may be. Now, over the first year or two of a baby's life, after having been exposed to this bacteria, or even not having been exposed, there is bacteria in the environment that they're exposed to that they ingest. Babies go through a phase where they're very oral when they're young, and everything goes in the mouth. As a developmental phase, psychologically, it's explained in various ways. But if we look at it in terms of developing the immune system of the body, that would be the baby, you know, subconsciously or completely unaware, but still ingesting bacteria to colonize itself. And as the baby weans, of course, it gets nutrients and quite possibly bacteria from the mother's milk. We know that antibodies to viruses that the mother has been exposed to are passed through mother's milk. So it only makes sense that bacteria, healthy bacteria, is also passed on if the mother possesses them. We know that if a mother has been on antibiotic therapies, that her biome can be severely disturbed, or if she's been on prolonged birth control, and that can impact how well inoculated the baby is when it's born. So the biome develops over the first 2 years, and of course that changes quite drastically if the baby is exposed to viruses or antibiotic therapies. But we do normally see that it stabilizes by the time they're about 3 years old. It is, to some degree, shaped by, as I said, the microbes in the breast milk, in the vaginal canal, in the environment. But long-term, it's really the diet and stressors that a person is exposed to that have to do with how this biome flourishes or doesn't. So if there is a diet that is very high in carbohydrate foods and very low in foods that promote a healthy biome, the person is going to be at much greater risk of developing an imbalanced microbiome. We see this, I see this clinically over and over. It's part of the reason why I recommend an ancestral or paleo ketogenic, towards the ketogenic side, diet with periods of intermittent fasting and with a lot of meat product in the diet if the person can tolerate it, because this type of a diet that's high in fat, rich in animal protein, and not just muscle protein, preferably organ meats, and soups and stews and bone broths and things like that that use the bones of the animal, those foods promote changes in the biome that you can see within a month of changing that diet, of changing to that diet, transitioning to that diet. And I see incredible benefit, not just in terms of what happens in the gut and digestion and assimilation, but in terms of what happens with mental health and developmental health and people that are struggling with that type of a diet. And since that's my primary focus clinically, mental health, addictions, behavioral health, this diet to me makes the most sense and the most difference clinically. Whenever I have a client that regularly consumes high amounts of starchy foods or sugars, carbohydrates, I'm just not able to get the same clinical results that I get with people who are willing to transition to a much more ancestral type diet. And you know, that transition can be short term for some healing to happen, or it can be longer term. But once people are able to do it in the short term and see the benefit, they very rarely decide, you know, I forget this, I don't like all this benefit that I'm receiving. But it does impact the microbiome. We also know that there are a number of stressors that can impact the microbiome. And there have been a number of studies that show that, for example, mice respond to noise stress in a way that alters their microbiome. We don't know if studies that happen in mice necessarily relate to people, but it is a model. It is food for thought. It is a way to, it helps us to start asking these questions and looking deeper at what the links are. We know that healthy microbiome changes the way that people respond to chemotherapy. Some people theorize that it's related to how well we sleep. I would agree with that. And I think that it plays a huge role in obesity, in prevalence of obesity. And it really helps to explain why you'll see families of people that are overweight and families that are rather slender. And you look at the food they're eating and you're not always certain, you know, what it's about. But we do know that family members kind of share the same microbiome. Even pets share the same microbiome in, I think it's the Microbiome Project on TED. They talk about how pets can be identified, matched with their families based on the closeness, the match of their microbiome. That's how close our biome is to our that of our pets. We also know that we can really change the health of an individual by fecal transplants. It's a whole new area of holistic exploration and health. And I invite you to go online and read about it if it's of interest to you. But we know that it can completely heal C. difficile, and nothing before was able to do that. So that's incredible. But now people are experimenting with it, and we know that it can induce depression if the person, the host, has suffered depression and the transplantee receives that, it can be passed on, at least in, I believe, in animal subjects. So we have a lot more investigation to do. So if the donor has a healthy microbiome in mice, if it's a rather thin, active mouse, and you take the fecal transplant and put it into an obese mouse, that mouse, without changing its food or, you know, some crazy lifestyle habit, I don't know what that would look like for mice, like a diet coach or something, but the mice suddenly lose weight. If you take, conversely, the fecal transplant from the obese mouse and you transplant it into the thin mouse, that mouse suddenly starts to gain weight. So this really helps us to understand how essential this is. And I think for people who struggle with not being able to lose weight, this is an elemental piece of the puzzle. I think that it takes time for the biome to become completely dysfunctional to a point where it's really negatively impacting your health on a grand spectrum, on a grand scale. But I don't think it takes that long to really start to turn it around if you add these foods, these fermented foods, back into your diet. So ways that you can do, you know, improve your microbiome include supplements that you can get from the health food store. Again, there are really only two that I know well enough clinically, I've had great success with, that I would recommend. Both of them contain over 50 billion live organisms and claim that that's guaranteed. Both are refrigerated. One is encapsulated, one is liquid, and both would have over 12 strains. I like to go for a broad spectrum probiotic unless there's a very specific condition that I'm treating that I know a particular one strain will address. So like traveler's diarrhea responds to a very specific strain, for example. So just to recap, I think it's important to look at the benefit that you can reap from introducing these things into your diet. The immune system is really impacted, not just immunity to viruses, to flus, but to disturbances in our genetics. So cancer type growths or autoimmune disorders, extreme inflammation like rheumatoid arthritis, that can be mitigated and greatly improved by supplementing with probiotics. Vitamins that you consume, whether it's through supplements or through food, are really unpacked and broken down, as is most of the, you know, any nutrient you consume, by the probiotics in the gut. So the bacteria that you house really help to do what needs to be done to the food that you consume to make it nutritive to you, to help you to assimilate it. So they play a huge role in your metabolism. So the gut flora helps you to utilize food that otherwise, if it's not there, if the right strains aren't there, it just bypasses. And so you don't get the nutrients that you need, which could have to do with, you know, why some people are never satisfied after eating. Maybe their bodies are not absorbing. I've maintained for a long time, I really think obesity is a starvation disease. I think that people have no satiety because they're not able to get the nutrients they need from the food, either because food choices are poor, the food itself is deficient, or the person is not able to extract the nutrients from it. So as I said, inflammation of various types, whether it's irritable bowel syndrome, colitis, arthritis, otitis media, all of these things respond to probiotic therapy. And autism. We now have research that shows that there is a link between autism and very low diversity in the gut biome. And for a great book on that, you want to read Dr. Natasha Campbell McBride's books and her research, The Gut and Psychology Syndrome, GAPS, it's called for short. There are things that we know of that destroy the beneficial bacteria in the gut biome, the number one of which is sugar. Another is fluoride in drinking water, artificial sweeteners, artificial food stuff, for lack of a better term. Wheat. I really believe there's enough data now on whether you're gluten sensitive or not, gluten intolerant or not, is not the issue. Wheat as it is now, the strain that we use now, really contains anti-nutrients that are very damaging to the gut and cause a number of problems with the ability of the gut to absorb nutrients. And so, and it really, it doesn't have any nutrients that are good for you. So I recommend across the board, if clients are interested in optimal health, wheat has to go. There are so many other wonderful foods out there. There's really no reason, you know, if it's a once in a while treat, I think that's the most that most people can consume safely. Other than that, I think find replacements that you enjoy. And you'll be amazed when you introduce new foods into your diet, how your taste buds change and how your cravings change when you become healthier. So again, you want to get rid of artificial sweeteners. You want to get rid of artificial flavorings, artificial colors. You want to get rid of any type of processed foods. Contain those. Tap water, if it's fluoridated, and you want to keep the sugar as low as you can. Get those, you know, fermented, home fermented foods in. That could include things like yogurt, kefir. You can make natto. You can make water kefir. You can make milk kefir. you can purchase natto. It's like a Japanese fermented soybean. It's really very cheesy in taste and texture. You can use miso, kimchi, kombucha. And these are just to name a few. There are really hundreds of fermented foods. I make fermented sauerkraut at home. I make fermented salsa, fermented ketchup, and teach classes on how to do this. But I do think it's really very important, if you aren't able to make these foods or get access to them through going through a health food store and getting the non-pasteurized version of these, to take a broad spectrum, highly active probiotic supplement at least daily. I don't think it makes a difference whether you take it with food or not. Just follow the directions and let me know what you notice in terms of benefits to your health. So this is Noni DeLong with Hope Health at hopenotdope.ca, and you can reach me if you need any further personal guidance. Namaste.